everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. We've got a really nice day, Tom, and you know, it's been unusually cool for November, but things are going to warm up a little bit today, and then we've got rain in the forecast.
We do. Saturday, they're saying a 40% chance.
Might have up to a half an inch of rain in the Tucson area. We need it, of course. Buckmaster, midweek edition. It's Wednesday, the final day of November. It's November 30th, 2022. I always think it's December, right after Thanksgiving. But no, we've had a couple of days here to close out November. We'll celebrate our 12 full years on the radio at the end of the year. Then we begin Lucky 13. Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We piggyback the live feed, KVOI.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We begin with Fletcher McCusker, chair of the Rio Nuevo District, downtown Tucson's Revitalization Board. Rio Nuevo is a tax increment finance district known as a TIF that is funded by a share of the state sales tax dollars and held accountable to the Arizona State Legislature for use of those funds. It was 1999. Voters approved the creation of the district, allowing TIF funds to be reinvested into the community to create a dynamic city center. Mr. McCusker is credited with spearheading much of the development downtown since moving the headquarters of Providence Service Corporation, a billion-dollar company that he founded, to downtown Tucson. Fletcher McCusker's latest venture, something called UA Ventures, a venture capital fund designed to commercialize University of Arizona science, technology, services, and products. Fletcher McCusker is the 2021 Arizona Business Leader of the Year Award. Fletcher, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you for asking. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. And let's kind of do a summary here. When you look at 2022, how would you characterize the year for Rio Nuevo?
Well, we're relieved in a word. COVID was disastrous for us. We get state tax revenue, of course, and when everything was closed, our revenue stopped. So we weren't sure it was going to be survivable. The good news is we're back even stronger than we were pre-COVID. Our monthly revenue is the best it's ever been. And we're busier now, Bill, than we've ever been.
How close were you during the pandemic to closing the doors?
Well, we dropped to zero revenue. And we weren't sure how it was going to come back or if it was going to come back. What was dramatically positive was once the COVID restrictions were lifted, people rushed back downtown. We've been inundated with restaurateurs and hotel developers and apartment builders and the events, jazz, the new Century Room at the Hotel Congress. You know, music is, the Rialto and the Fox Music Hall. Everybody's back, and we're just elated. And, of course, it's producing revenue.
You think people are just saying, well, COVID is a part of life, like dealing with maybe the annual flu?
I think it's exactly what people we talk to and people we see downtown. Once the restrictions, like at the Fox, were lifted, they've been sold out. The concerts at the music hall are back and sold out. So people seem to treat COVID as a historical event.
What are your demographics now? Who's visiting downtown?
Well, it's everybody. We see a lot of young people, of course, which we would expect, that bar hop. The streetcar enables that, frankly.
Yeah, it's a university town, of course.
Yeah, but we see a lot of adult diners. The restaurateurs are catering. They're very expensive, so they're catering to a very an older crowd that's willing to spend $100, $150, for four people downtown. The symphony is very robust, the ballet, the concerts at the TCC. So it's a real mixture of young people, a lot of pedestrian traffic, and then people who are enjoying the amenities. If you look at the apartment dwellers, people who are renting downtown, half of them, Bill, are our age. Mm-hmm. And they've sold their house in Saddlebrook to move downtown. And they walk. They, you know, walk everywhere. And if they go anywhere, they Uber. And then the other half of that is the baby boomer, the kids of the baby boomers who have moved downtown as well.
That's very interesting. You're saying people that maybe felt isolated in communities like up in Saddlebrook, maybe they have decided they would like that, or they do want the interaction of people.
Yeah, and you can see it in the restaurants. You can see it in the theaters. You can see it at this, you know, music hall. We reopened the ice rink just a few days ago, and it's been packed every day.
You know, I look through the lens of a little bit of time. You and I have been here a long time, and I think back maybe when those monthly visits I had on TV with then-Mayor Bob Walkup. How important was getting the I think it was called a Tiger Grant, and our friend Terry Bracey worked on that, lobbyist in Washington, to get that Tiger Grant to make the downtown streetcar happen?
It's our waterfront. I mean, every developer we've seen since wants to be on the streetcar line, whether it's a hotel or a restaurant, Caterpillar. You know, the streetcar enabled a lot of desirable development. And if you look at development all along the line, University, Main Gate, 4th Avenue, downtown, now the West Side, there's a huge impact of the streetcar. Now, we're probably going to subsidize it forever because it's never going to make money, and it's not really a commuter. Mm-mm. But it became this really interesting feature that enabled a lot of track development along all the way from the university through to the West Side.
And back in the day, that was the selling point. That's what I heard from those that said, we've got to do this streetcar, because you will see development, economic development, follow the line.
And that's true. It's true. Every place that's built a modern streetcar, people want to be along the line, especially bars, restaurants. They want to be able to use that public transportation so people don't have to drive. And parking is still a challenge downtown. So, you know, to the extent that relieves any of the parking problems we have, you know, the streetcar has been a real blessing to us.
How about security in the downtown area?
Well, one of the side effects of everybody coming downtown at once is we do have an element of undesirable people downtown. Rio Nuevo is paying for off-duty police to help patrol that. It has to be safe. You can't walk in an environment where you're fearful. Are you going to be panhandled, or there's visible drug use? And that's very prevalent in many Western cities, Portland, San Francisco, Seattle. We don't have that problem. We have a very small piece of that problem, but we're doing what we can to nip it in the bud. And TPD has been great. We have off-duty officers, two a day now, every day, that Rio Nuevo funds.
Why is parking a problem? Is there no money to run a parking garage? Is that part of the deal? I mean, when I say no money, it's not a big profit center.
They all make money, and okay, the surface lots make money. I think the issue is drivers, particularly in Tucson, are spoiled. Uh-huh. When you can go to the mall and park and walk
for free,
and you don't have to hunt around for a parking space. So any urban environment is parking starved. And the thesis was that we could make it so attractive, you would figure it out. And that seems to be working. The Broadway extension of Rio Nuevo is also going to be parking challenged. So hopefully people find alternative ways. If you look at the top 10 Uber destinations, number one is the airport. The next nine are all downtown.
Really?
Yeah.
You said the extension of on the Broadway of the district. The district ends at Elkhorn, is that correct?
That's correct. And we've never really done any work east of downtown. We're now responsible for the Sunshine Mile. That's all the way to Country Club. So we're doing extensive renovation and reactivation with our partners of many of the abandoned buildings that the roadway widening generated.
Which seemed to have taken forever, but it's done. And now what about economic development? Will there be economic development along that mile?
Yeah, we've partnered on some 50 properties in just the last few months to activate with private developers, mostly on the north side of Broadway, but some on the south side.
Let's pause right here with Fletcher McCusker and talk a little bit about my favorite bakery in town. You like bakery goods, Fletcher?
I go any chance I get.
There you go.
You can see it right here.
Yeah, I know. We both carry a little bit of excess weight around the waist. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Wouldn't a Danish Kringle be a wonderful idea for Christmas Eve morning or Christmas Day? Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They had a very wonderful Thanksgiving season, and they're now taking orders for Christmas as well for your Christmas pies and your dinner rolls. Mona'sDanishBakery.com, the website, the home of the Danish Kringle. More with Fletcher McCusker on The Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We continue now our conversation with Fletcher McCusker, the chair of the Rio Nuevo District, downtown Tucson's Revitalization Board. There's really big news happening with the Tucson Fox Theater. And when you think back Really, it hasn't been that long ago that the Fox was really kind of struggling. I think it goes back to 2014 when Rio Nuevo bought the Fox Theater from, was it the National Trust for Historic Preservation?
That's exactly right. That year, the Fox Theater's revenue was $600,000, and they lost $600,000. It was a going out of business plan. Briefly, right before that, you may remember the city of Tucson took it over,
yes.
Took the management over.
Right.
And of course, that was a terrible idea. Bonnie Schock, who now is the director of the Fox, is a game changer. She came here from Minneapolis. She has a professional theater background. And the Fox has been very choosy about who it books. And they've been sold out as a consequence. So we were happy to help them expand. What they've done, Bill, is acquire all the properties adjacent to them to the east, Brugger's Bagels all the way around that corner, and they're going to expand their lobby and restaurant and bar, rooftop bar, into that section of stone.
It's a nearly 100-year-old venue. What's the financial picture look like then, this sale?
Well, their revenue right before COVID was mm-hmm. $6 million,
okay.
10 times what it was in 2014. So economically, the Fox has done very well. But it's you walk in and sit down. There's really nothing else to do. There's no real lobby. There's no food and beverage. The concessions are tucked away in the corner. This will really expand it to our version of Carnegie Hall. It'll have a huge lobby and entrance. It'll have a sit-down restaurant, a rooftop bar, private VIP rooms in the new section. No additional seating. We're not changing the historic nature of the venue itself, but adding on to its amenities by taking over the adjacent property.
So the Rio Nuevo board then has agreed to sell the theater back to the Fox Theater Foundation. Now, this is a $21 million expansion project. It's huge. It's 20,000 square feet. How will the Fox raise the money? Through donors or what?
That's their plan, and they've been very aggressive here so far. They're going to run a capital campaign, which they believe they can raise $20 million. And they may have to mortgage some piece of that if they're not successful. But we were convinced that there's not a lot of risk given the research they've done, Bill, about the possibility of donor participation in the scaling of the Fox. So we're optimistic, they're optimistic that they're going to raise the money.
And this is, you mentioned the lady who is now heading up the project. She has this experience, she said, in Minneapolis?
Yeah, she's a professional theater manager. We went through a process to find a new director. She stood above everybody. She literally moved here in March of 2019.
Wow. To coincide with the start of the pandemic.
And seriously, like within the week she got here, the Fox had to close.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, you may have followed the Save Our Stages Act, which provided money to venues that were shuttered to help them get through the darkest of the pandemic times. And the Fox Theater was a beneficiary of that. It would probably otherwise be out of business.
Talk a little bit about your latest venture, UA Ventures. You call it, it's a capital fund commercializing UA science, technology, services, and products. We had President Robbins on the program yesterday talking about the hottest thing in medical research are targeted therapies, going after tumors and stuff. Are any of your items in the pipeline go along with that?
The only medical company we've invested in is a painkiller drug that was embedded on campus. Most of the work we're doing is with optics, engineering. You know, that's where the university excels in NASA's work. You know, most people don't appreciate, you know, we now have $800 million of research at this university. Most of that never gets to the market. So what President Robbins has asked us to do is to help fund and commercialize the best and the brightest. So we've invested in a dozen U of A inventions that hopefully at some point all of them will be marketable products as we nurture them along, build a prototype, and expose them to the market. And this is new. You know, the university has not allowed its faculty to benefit from their own research historically. And, of course, Bobby's changed that.
I want to talk a little bit about, you've mentioned that before on the program, this painkiller. How is that coming along?
It's in the market right now. We're talking to a number of large pharmacy companies about some sort of sale or acquisition merger.
Non-addictive?
Non-addictive painkiller. As strong as morphine, without any addictive qualities. Now, it has not been tested in humans. And, of course, the path to get a drug from a lab, it's been tested in rodents. You know, this is a 8-year, 10-year process.
It's maybe 8 more to 10 years before you think?
Yeah, with human trials. First, it goes into large animals, mm-hmm. and then human trials, several levels of blind test to prove the efficacy of this drug.
I mean, it'd be a huge game changer. People fear surgery because they worry about becoming addicted to Oxy and some of these other things. Imagine a non-addictive painkiller.
The other thing they've demonstrated in the lab, if you cut it, that's a street term, but if you combine their drug with morphine,
yeah,
it's as powerful as it was without the combination, but morphine loses its addictive qualities.
Wow.
So this is one of the best inventions probably that came out of the U of A, and we're privileged to have the chance to expose it to the world.
Okay, well, that's in the pipeline. We'll keep our fingers crossed for that. Getting back to downtown, how do you expand Rio Nuevo, and is it a big deal now with the change of leadership in Phoenix? What does that mean?
We'll see. The governor, there's a Rio Nuevo board is a 9-member board.
Right.
The governor has 5 of those appointments. Governor Ducey never took them. He only appointed 3 people. So we've been a 7-member board for as long as I've been there, 10 mm-hmm. years. We fully expect that Governor Hobbs is going to fill up her appointments. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, could change the nature of the board. Now, we still report to a very Republican Senate and a very Republican House. So it's going to force us to become bipartisan, or we're not going to get anything done. So we're going to have to probably work with both sides of the aisle to learn to appreciate things that are important to both parties.
What's the big deal for 2023? What are you pointing at for downtown?
We expect to see a couple more hotels develop. We are going to develop 75 East Broadway. That's the lot across from TEP. That's a 22-story prospect. That is probably likely now going to be hotel rather than office. So a couple of really big projects. And then, of course, we still own the landfill, Bill, on the far west side of downtown, which has to be remediated before it can be developed. But the cost of land now has increased to the point where that's not inconceivable.
When Rio Nuevo was first conceived, the west side was the big focus, and you've just said there's the whole redoing and trying to clean up that landfill would be an enormous expense.
I'm sad to say I think we as voters were misled in mm-hmm. that 1999 proposition.
How so, Fletcher?
It never identified that the development they were proposing was in the area of maybe one of the most toxic landfills in the U.S. We didn't learn this until we settled with the city, and part of what they did to settle us was deed us that property. It's incredibly toxic, and the only way to fix it is to dredge it and haul it away. That's a $50 million item. Hmm. So nothing can be developed over there. Nothing ever would have been developed over there without the remediation of this landfill. The original Rio Nuevo board had the money to do it, but they never did. So we're all stuck now with this 30-acre toxic landfill that continues to leach chlorine, and it jeopardizes the aquifer. We don't have a choice but to clean it.
It was the centerpiece.
Indeed, it was.
Unfortunately, it was the centerpiece of all of these pipe dreams of these big projects and attractions that were going to be going over on the west side.
It was the last straw for the legislature. You know, I mean, the entire thing was a boondoggle. There's no other way to explain it. And you don't know how many people. There's probably somebody deep in City Hall that knew how difficult this was going to be. But everyone bought into the dream, the fantasy of that whole area being redeveloped, an aquarium, a museum, you know, the Rainbow Bridge. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Bill, it's a landfill. It's still one of the most toxic landfills in the U.S.
30-acre site. Oh, boy. Fletcher McCusker, chair of the Rio Nuevo District Downtown Tucson Revitalization Board. I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season. Thank you, Fletcher.
We'll see you next year.
Okay. Take a break right here. Up next, Terry Goddard, former Arizona Attorney General.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things gearing up for the holidays, the poinsettia capital of, I think, Arizona. When you grow 20,000 poinsettias, I think they are more than ready, and lots of people love the poinsettias. They really will brighten up your holidays. Also, Zocalo Village, the beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. The five shops at Zocalo Village have all sorts of holiday-related items for you. GreenThingsAZ.com, 3384 East River Road, by the Rito River, and of course, ZocaloVillage.com, Green Things, in their 52nd year of business here in Tucson, open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will be doing next, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. There was one thing that Arizona voters agreed upon on Election Day. In fact, a rock solid 73% of voters, nearly 3 in 4, approved Proposition 211, the Voters' Right to Know Act. It passed in early balloting. It passed with Election Day voters. It passed in every county in Arizona. And one person who is very instrumental in making that happen, joining us now on our live line, former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard. It was a long-awaited win, Terry, for you and your grassroots group of volunteers who worked for 14 months on this campaign to get secret money out of democracy. Terry Goddard, how are you, sir?
I'm much better for what you just reported, Bill. It's a huge relief for many of us to say the voters of Arizona just overwhelmingly said we want to have transparency in political contributions. It feels very good. It took a long time, as you pointed out, but I'm just tremendously glad at the result.
Were you surprised at the result?
Not really, in that we'd done some polling, and the polling showed that better than 80% of voters who were asked a detailed question about transparency said, yes, I want that. The reason it was 73, as you mentioned, I think had partly to do with some confusion on the ballot. It was a difficult ballot proposition to understand. They used very technical language. They didn't use any of our great buzz phrases like stop dark money or voters' right to know. They just did the various thresholds that are provided for in the act. Nothing deceptive about it. It wasn't a great sales job. And so I think we lost a few votes there, but I'm delighted with the result. It just shows that Arizona voters, regardless of party, as you pointed out, regardless of background, overwhelmingly said, this is something we want to change about the way our elections are handled.
Prop 211, Terry Goddard, was a, in effect, new and improved proposal. Give us a little background on what it took to get to this point.
Well, I don't want to say that people who run ballot initiatives should try four times before they actually get them passed. That's not a recommendation on my part. It did have some advantages, and they're subtle. One was that we did, in fact, I believe, get the proposition better each of the four times we tried it. Not that the first one was bad, but the last one was much better. Had some protections in it for the donors that, frankly, weren't there before, and I think makes it much more much stronger in the case of some kind of an attack in the courts. The other thing is that in the process of four campaigns, just about everybody in Arizona got a chance to sign our petition. And so by the time we asked them, was I surprised? No, I figured we personally contacted most of those voters that voted yes. So they knew what we were talking about.
Why don't we talk a little bit about what this Proposition 211 says, and now will become law. Let's talk about what's involved here.
Well, it's a simple proposition, really. It says that if you're going to spend money on politics, and by that we mean media advertising, you've got to tell us who you are. And who you are means not some funny named intermediary that is Citizens for Peanut Butter or Arizonans for Better Everything, which is the kind of names you see today for the dark money operatives. It has to go to the original donor, and that's defined in the statute. It's the person or corporation who earned the money. not the one that passed it from one hand to the other so that they could disguise the original source. And I think that's critical to the understanding is we're going after the one who wrote the first check, and it has to be a check of over $5,000. So we're not deliberately not trying to cause extra issues for any of the smaller contributors. We frankly didn't want to burden people with the paperwork. We're going after the bigger folks who believe that their contributions is going to change elections. And that's what dark money has been doing for years in Arizona. And I think and the voters seem to agree that it's time to stop it, that it's time that we knew who it is that's standing behind the advertisements. And one other thought, Bill, is that most of these dark money ads are negative ads. Because the person who's booking them, the person whose corporation is put on the disclosure line, has no reputation to protect. They have only one job. They have only one mission, and that's to get one somebody elected and get the other candidate destroyed. And they take that very seriously, and they don't care about the truth. They don't care about defamation. They just go after it. And unfortunately, we've seen so much negative campaigning, so much negative advertisements in Arizona because we are the dark money capital of America.
For local races, the threshold would be then what, $25,000?
$25,000 for city council or legislature for if the money, and it's the amount of money that's spent over the election cycle, so it's a 2-year period. And it's $50,000 for statewide campaigns. And as soon as you hit the $50,000, for example, if your organization is promoting candidates or propositions that are statewide, then the obligation to disclose kicks in. And you have to say all original contributors of $5,000 or more have to have their name, address disclosed at the Secretary of State.
Sadly, it will not be affecting federal spending, will it?
No, it won't. I have grandiose dreams, but trying to get the federal process included is just beyond our capacity here in Arizona. But I hope, and this is a fervent prayer, that having Arizona, which is the state that had the most toxic environment in terms of dark money in our campaigns, had the most permissive legislation in the country to permit campaign contributors to hide their identity. If we can by a huge majority say no to dark money, I hope it stiffens the spine of some Congress people who now understand that this is popular, this is what the voters want to do, and folks in other states are paying attention, and hopefully some of them will pick up the ball and pass it in their environment. Because there's nothing, I just did an interview with James Carville, and he kept saying that this line, which I think is memorable, this is just good politics. How many issues do you have out there in this divided country that Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives can say, yeah, we want to see that? And I think we've got that particular proposition here in Prop 211 that the voters passed.
So you have the Arizona legislature and the dark money groups that for years have blocked dark money disclosure initiatives from ever reaching the ballot. Their fight with these people apparently isn't over yet. They want to run this to the U.S. Supreme Court. Is that correct?
Well, I can't anticipate their game plan. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised. They have too much money at stake. I mean, they've been operating since 2010. This has been the operative venue or viaduct. It's been what a lot of corporate money has used to be involved in politics, because corporations really don't want their shareholders or their customers to know what they're doing. So they try to do it secretly. And we had that example here in Arizona with Arizona Public Service doing a secret campaign to elect two members of the Corporation Commission. They were successful in that. The backlash, however, was pretty profound, because when I talked to people about passing petitions, they all mention APS as an effort by corporate America to fool us as voters. And it was successful in Arizona. So we've been warned, and we're going to take active steps. But I think we will get a a legal challenge of some kind. There's just too much money on the table. There are too many of these dark money filtering or moving organizations, like one called the Free Enterprise Club, which has been around for a number of years. They make their living off of dark money. They are the conduit. They are the ones that get the checks and then spend the money on political ads. Have done it for years, and this is a rich mother load for them, and they don't want to give it up. So I'm sure they will take every effort they can to stop us before we get in the statute books.
All right. Terry Goddard, stick around. Before we do take the break, let's see if we can work in a couple quick questions from listeners. Scott has sent me an email. Where did the money used to promote this come from, Terry Goddard?
I love that question. Thank you. Because so many of the ballot propositions that you see are brought to us courtesy of some out-of-state interest. All of our backers financially and, of course, our volunteers were from Arizona. And that is kind of unique. There's one exception. It's about 6 or 7% of our total money came from a national group called Voters Right to Know, who, by the way, disclose all of their donors. But they, I figure, are pseudo-Arizonans because the guy who runs it used to live in Scottsdale, and his wife is from Tucson. So they have a lot of deep roots in this community, although their headquarters is in California. But it's an Arizona-born and bred and drafted proposition, and I'm very proud of that.
All right. Let's see if we can work a quick question in from Michael. Michael emails me, please ask Mr. Goddard why unions have a carve-out within the transparency bill.
Well, you know, that's one of the myths that I've heard a lot, especially from our opponents. And it's just not true. There is a special exception for membership organizations, and that's unions, that's chambers of commerce, that's a whole variety of groups who accumulate dues money. And we felt that it was important to put them in a special category because they are the real contributors. So if Union X, Y, and Z pays for an ad, the disclosure on the law without this exception would have said, brought to you by a lot of money from small contributors, which would have been the people paying their union dues. And we didn't think that was very very realistic. So basically, unions have to put their name on the ads if they're the ones paying for it, and not the individual dues members. Now, there's an exception to that, too. We wanted to be very careful because we didn't want a union or a chamber of commerce to become a conduit. And so if the amount is more than $5,000, that is put toward the ad from one source, from one individual, then that gets disclosed. That individual would have their name put out. But I'm glad you asked that question. It's been brought up a lot as some kind of special deal that we cut, and it's exactly the opposite. I mean, we made sure that this is equal opportunity. Everybody is affected. Everybody has to disclose.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Some closing remarks from Terry Goddard, former Arizona Attorney General, after the break.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Want to tell our listeners about our wonderful part of the Southwest. We send so many of our listeners to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only a three-hour drive approximately east of Tucson. Lots of outdoor activities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Visit Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, southwestnewmexico.org, for more on things to do and some great places to stay and dine in historic Silver City. We continue now with our conversation with former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard. We've been talking about Prop 211, which passed by a rock-solid 73% of voters approving the Voters' Right to Know Act. We had another listener question during the break. Terry, you mentioned that Arizona had been the dark money capital. Why is that? What's some of the history of dark money in this state? How far back does it go?
Good question. It goes back a long way, but the big, tidal wave of dark money came after 2010, which was when Citizens United opened the floodgates of corporate cash coming into elections, into campaigns. So that was a very important year. The cost of running for office, I can tell you personally, went up by 4 to 5 times here in Arizona, especially for statewide office. It's a tidal wave. I think in our parched desert, it's perhaps the wrong analogy, but it really hit us hard. And Arizona lawmakers have been exceptionally docile, I guess is the word, or maybe proactive is a better word, in terms of supporting hidden political money. They have made it easy for dark money operations to come here. And in fact, when Phoenix and Tempe, Tucson passed an ordinance in favor of open uh, uh, open elections and full transparency. But it was on the ballot in both back in 18 in both Tempe and Phoenix. They passed by huge margins, 91 point something percent in Tempe and 85% in Phoenix. So again, no question, Bill, you asked me if I was surprised. Now, based on those city votes, I was not that surprised, although I still had my heart in my throat until we got the final election in. But as soon as the cities did that, the legislature, led by Senator Leach from Oro Valley, immediately passed a preemption that said if any city tries to interfere with the disclosure or require the disclosure of any contributions made to a 501c nonprofit, and almost all, if not all, the dark money goes through 501c4s, nonprofit organizations that are advocacy groups, then they would lose state shared revenue. They would be penalized. And the result has been, unfortunately, that the cities have never actually exercised their transparency provisions. And I'm pleased to say that Prop 211 has a specific statement in it that authorizes the cities to do even greater transparency disclosure requirements than are provided in the statute. So I like to say sometimes, and I don't like to say it, but it's the truth. Arizona legislators that have passed these bills are either getting dark money, they're supported by it, they're afraid of it, they're afraid it will primary them in the next election, or they want to get it in the future. So the result has been just exceptional permission to hide your identity if you're a major contributor.
All right, let's see if we can work in a call here real quickly on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ingrid, you're with Terry Goddard. Quickly, please.
Okay, you talk about dark money. What about dark conversations where deals can be cut between a potential contributor, a potential candidate? We don't talk about those dark conversations. And also, you talked about 501c3s. You know that clergymen are being given salaries now by our government? This is something we have to look at, too.
All right. Thank you, Ingrid. Go ahead, Terry.
Ingrid, there is lots more that needs to be done. But I want to be very clear that our proposition is focused only on contributions and the sources of the contributions. We believe that that's something that the Supreme Court cases have left as an open opportunity for disclosure. And we can't get into individual conversations. I know some of them are, let's say, should be prevented, but that's the First Amendment speaking there.
All right.
Can't get into that.
I got less than 20 seconds. Matt, you're on the air. You got to make it like one sentence question for Terry.
Terry, very quickly, the campaign requires if it's 50 or 25,000 locally. How are the sources of the money? For instance, the Stephen Miller group, it took me a while to track it down, that ran those campaigns, those ads against Mark Kelly. Is it just, how do you disclose the people?
10 seconds, Terry.
10 seconds. Well, this is based on expenditures. So when you pay money for ads, that's where we start, and that's where the 50,000 trigger would come in. So I'm not saying every dime gets reported; it doesn't. But the major advertising is reported. The stations have to say who's paying. But it doesn't go back to the original source. And this proposition will allow us to leap beyond the most immediate payer and find who's really putting up the money.
All right, Terry Goddard, thank you very much. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. We'll take it back in 23 hours. Have a great afternoon, everybody.